Chapter 7. Ritual magic is not my favorite thing in the whole world. It doesn't matter what I'm trying to accomplish. I still feel sort of silly when it comes time to bathe and then dress myself up in a white robe with a hood, lighting candles and incense, chanting and mucking around with a small arsenal of candles, wands, rods, liquids, and other props used in ritual magic. Self-conscious as I might be, though, the props and the process offered me an overriding advantage when it came to working with heavy magic. They freed up my attention from the dozens of little details that I would normally be forced to imagine and keep firmly in mind. Most of the time, I never gave the proper visualization a second thought. I'd been doing it for so long that it was practically second nature. That was fine for short-term work, where I had to hold my thoughts in perfect balance only for a few seconds. But for a longer spell, I would need an exponentially greater amount of focus and concentration. It took someone with a lot more mental discipline than me to cast a spell through a half-hour ritual without help. And while there were probably experienced wizards who could manage it, few bothered to try it when the alternative was usually simpler, safer, and more likely to work. I rounded up the props I would need for the ritual, with the elements first. A silver cup, which I would fill with wine, for water. A geode the size of my fist, its internal crystals vibrant shades of purple and green, for earth. Fire would be represented by a fairy-made candle, formed from unused beeswax, its wick braided from the hairs of a unicorn's mane. Air would be anchored by a pair of hawkwing feathers wrought from gold with impossibly fine detail and precision by a band of Svartalfs whose mortal contact sold examples of their craftsmanship out of a shop in Norway. And for the fifth element, spirit, I would use my mother's silver pentacle amulet. Other props followed to engage the senses. Incense for scent and fresh grapes for taste. Tactile forces would depend upon a double-sided 3-inch square I'd made from velvet on one side and sandpaper on the other. A rather large, deeply colored opal set within a silver frame reflected back every color of the rainbow and would hold down the sight portion of the spell. And when I got rolling, I would strike my old tuning fork against the floor for sound. Mind, body, and heart came last. For mind, I would use an old K-bar military knife as my ritual athame, as I usually did. Fresh droplets of my blood upon a clean white cloth would symbolize my physical body. For heart, I placed several photos of those who were dear to me inside a sack of silver-white silk. My parents, Susan, Murphy, Thomas, Mouse, and Mister, my 30-pound gray tomcat currently on walkabout, and after a brief hesitation, Michael and his family. I prepared the ritual circle on my lab floor, carefully sweeping it, mopping it, sweeping it again, then cleansing it with captured rainwater poured from a small silver ewer. I brought in all the props and laid them out, ready to go. Then I prepared myself. I lit sandalwood incense and more fairy candles in the bathroom, started up the shower, then went step by step through a routine of washing while focusing my mind on the task at hand. The water sluicing over me would drain away any random magical energies, a crucial step in the spell. Contaminating the spell's energy with other forces would cause it to fail.